Welcome to the Lowdown. This is an AI-generated open-source news summary for general informational awareness. This product is not intended for use as official intelligence. The views expressed here are solely those of the cited authors and do not reflect the official policy or position of the Department of War, the United States Air Force, or any other U.S. government agency.
Here is your operational bottom line up front. Cheap, asymmetric technologies are fundamentally disrupting traditional military superiority across multiple theaters. We are seeing uncrewed systems manipulate economic choke points in the Middle East, while gray zone tactics are actively redefining borders in the Indo-Pacific and Eastern Europe. And finally, the projected integration of artificial intelligence into these systems by 2035 threatens to accelerate conflicts completely beyond human control.
Right. So thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Today, we're unpacking a massive stack of reporting from this past month, July 2026. And, you know, our mission is to extract the critical connections for you from all these intelligence updates and frontline reports.
Yeah, exactly. We're really looking at how asymmetric tech, economic pressure points, and automated decision making are just completely altering the global balance of power.
It's fascinating. But, before we jump into the weeds, I do need to give a strict neutrality note.
Mm-hmm.
We are covering some highly politically charged material today, including, you know, the U.S.-Iran conflicts and the newly announced Israel-Gaza agreements.
Right. Very sensitive stuff.
Exactly. So we want to make it absolutely clear to you, the listener, that we are impartially reporting the claims from our sources.
Mm.
We're not endorsing any viewpoints. We're not contradicting the administration. And we're just here to give you the facts without taking sides.
Absolutely. Just a straightforward briefing.
Right. So, I mean, picture the ultimate symbol of naval dominance. You're probably imagining a massive billion-dollar guided missile destroyer. Right? Like a colossal mountain of steel bristling with radar.
A literal physical embodiment of state power. Unstoppable.
Yeah. Right. Unstoppable. Which makes this recent intelligence report from June 15th so, frankly, bizarre. A Chinese Type 052D guided missile destroyer was forced to abruptly take evasive action. And it wasn't dodging a submarine. It was dodging a 12-foot, 305-pound solar-powered surfboard.
Yeah, essentially a tiny commercial drone boat. It completely inverts our traditional understanding of power dynamics at sea.
It really does. So let's look at the mechanics of this because it happened in the Luzon Strait. And for some quick geography for you, that's a highly strategic waterway about 75 miles northwest of the Philippine island of Luzon.
Right. It's just directly between Taiwan and the Philippines. So it's one of the most critical transit choke points for shipping and military vessels. If a conflict breaks out in the Indo-Pacific, that strait becomes a super weapons engagement zone.
And into this highly monitored area floats this tiny uncrewed surface vessel, or USV. It's called the CSATS Lightfish. It's totally unarmed, but it has incredible endurance.
Yeah, it uses a hybrid solar power system. So the solar panels trickle charge the batteries for the radar, and a small internal engine kicks in when it needs bursts of speed.
Wow.
I mean, it can stay out there for up to 6 months with a range of over 8,000 nautical miles.
6 months. That's wild. So this Lightfish basically just tracked the massive Chinese destroyer on radar from about 10 miles out, closed the distance to a few hundred meters, and casually captured video of the warship having to maneuver around it.
Exactly. And the psychological impact of that is what matters. The Lightfish was a commercial vessel on a data gathering mission, but the crew of that Chinese destroyer didn't know that.
Because it's completely ambiguous.
Right. That ambiguity is the core of the asymmetric threat right now.
Because, I mean, the oceans are swarming with lethal versions of these drones. We've seen Ukraine's Magura drone boats systematically dismantle the Russian Black Sea Fleet using swarm tactics.
Sending dozens of explosive boats at a single frigate, yeah.
Yeah, it just overwhelms the defenses. And the Houthi kamikaze boats are doing the same thing in the Red Sea. It's, well, it's like a swarm of mosquitoes attacking an elephant. One mosquito is fine. A swarm changes the entire ecosystem.
That's a great analogy. And the ecosystem is getting crowded because we used to think of these as weapons for non-state actors, but the U.S. Navy has fully adopted this playbook now.
Right. Our sources highlighted two massive milestones in July. On July 12th, U.S. Central Command, CIPENCOM, used Corsair USVs in offensive combat for the first time.
Striking an Iranian Ghadir-class midget submarine, correct?
Exactly. Those stealthy coastal subs. And then, at the RIMPAC 2026 exercises, the U.S. used a Guards Kamikaze boat to help sink a decommissioned assault ship, the ex-USS Palelio. So the U.S. is actively integrating these into strikes.
Which brings us back to the terrifying ambiguity for sailors. Put yourself in the shoes of a captain on a military destroyer. Radar picks up a 12-foot drone boat approaching. How do you know its intent?
I mean, don't you check for a transponder signal?
Or fly. You can try, but the automatic identification system, AIS, can easily be spoofed. Flags can be faked. You literally have no idea if it's a friendly research drone or a bomb.
So what are the rules in engagement? You can't just authorize lethal force against every small boat.
No, and that's the headache. The threshold for escalation is broken. If you sink a crewed frigate, you start a war. If you shoot a piece of uncrewed fiberglass, the geopolitical cost is incredibly low. But mix in commercial shipping and nervous captains, and the risk of a deadly miscalculation goes through the roof.
Yeah, and speaking of commercial shipping, let's pivot to the Middle East, because this exact asymmetric ambiguity is being weaponized to choke off global energy supplies.
Right, the July 29th drone strike.
Exactly. On July 29th, a drone strike hit the Egyptian port of Damietta,
which is just 33 miles west of the Suez Canal. Extremely significant geography.
Right. And the targets were two LNG tankers, the U.S.-owned Energos Winter and the Greek-owned Gaslog Salem. The Houthis denied it, but Iranian sources suggested it was designed to show that global shipping could be disrupted anywhere.
Because for months, shipping companies were bypassing the Strait of Hormuz by routing oil through the Red Sea and up the Suez Canal. Hitting Damietta sends a message. Your alternative route is not safe.
The fallout from that was immediate. The U.S. conducted retaliatory strikes against Iranian military sites along the Persian Gulf that very same day. And Admiral Brad Cooper has reportedly prepared options for a punishing 10 to 14 day air campaign against Iran.
The regional spillover is already happening, too. The IRGC claimed they destroyed F-35s at Jordan's Muwaffaq Salty Air Base,
which CNTCOM firmly denied, it's worth noting.
Right, they denied it. But meanwhile, Iranian-backed militias in Iraq targeted Saudi oil infrastructure, which prompted joint U.S.-Saudi retaliatory strikes.
I have to ask, though, if the goal is to deter the U.S. and its allies, doesn't hitting international energy targets just guarantee an overwhelming U.S. response? Mm-hmm. It seems like a bad strategy.
It seems illogical militarily, but this is a masterclass in economic attrition. It's about altering the risk calculations of shipping companies.
By driving up the maritime insurance premiums.
Precisely. Shipping margins are thin. When a drone hits a port in Egypt, insurance underwriters spike the premiums for the whole region. If insurance costs more than the profit on the LNG, the companies stop sailing. Energy prices spike globally. It artificially inflates the economic cost of the war for the U.S. without directly fighting a carrier strike group.
That makes a lot of sense. But geopolitics is just wildly paradoxical. Because right next door to all this, our sources outline a massive diplomatic breakthrough.
The Gaza Board of Peace Agreement.
Right. Comprising the U.S., Egypt, Qatar, and Turkey. They announced an agreement where Hamas has agreed to fully disarm in stages, and Israel will withdraw its forces from Gaza over a period of time. And again, strictly maintaining our neutrality, we're just reporting the terms exactly as they appear in the intel. But the juxtaposition is crazy. A monumental peace step in Gaza is happening at the exact same moment we're talking about a potential 14-day air campaign in the Persian Gulf.
It shows how modern regional powers compartmentalize. The Middle East isn't just one single powder keg anymore. Nations are pragmatic. A peace deal in Gaza serves the strategic interests of Egypt and Qatar, even while they navigate escalating proxy wars next door.
Yeah, three-dimensional chess. And this compartmentalization is internal, too. While Iran is projecting all this power outward, they're dealing with severe internal pressures, right?
Yes, specifically in the Sistan and Balochistan province.
Right, which is a rugged, impoverished province bordering Pakistan. Historically a hotbed for anti-regime activity. According to the reporting, fighters tied to the Mobarizan Popular Front, an armed Baloch coalition, killed local law enforcement officers.
And the regime is terrified of losing control of the narrative there. So they're resorting to information warfare against their own citizens.
By launching Balochi language news broadcasts on state TV.
Exactly, for the first time ever. It's an attempt to pacify internal dissent without having to pull military resources back from the coast.
It's a stark reminder that projecting strength abroad often masks vulnerabilities at home. But moving away from these acute kinetic events in the Middle East, let's look at the creeping expansions of power.
The gray zone tactics in the Indo-Pacific and Eastern Europe.
Yeah. Ray Powell's analysis on Taiwan really caught my eye. He basically argues that we're all waiting for this dramatic D-Day style invasion of Taiwan, but we're missing the fact that the quarantine is already happening.
It's the boiling frog scenario.
Exactly. If you put a frog in boiling water, it jumps out. But if you slowly turn up the heat in tepid water, It doesn't realize it's cooking until it's too late. Powell says China is slowly turning up the heat through intrusive Coast Guard patrols, military exercises, and economic isolation.
And using the Coast Guard is brilliant from a gray zone perspective. White-hulled law enforcement ships operate under different legal frameworks than gray-hulled military warships.
So when they board a Taiwanese vessel, they frame it as a domestic police action.
Right. And how does the U.S. Navy aggressively counter a domestic police action without looking like they are the ones escalating the conflict? They keep actions just below the threshold of all-out war.
Testing the absolute limits, which is exactly what Russia is doing, just with much more lethal hardware. During recent strikes on Ukraine, a Russian KH-101 cruise missile crashed in eastern Poland.
And Poland is NATO territory.
Right, so the intelligence indicates Russia is actively accepting the risk of these incursions. They are launching stealthy cruise missiles incredibly close to the border just to test NATO's reaction.
And to make matters more complicated, Russia is now utilizing North Korean-provided ballistic missiles in these bombardments.
It's a deliberate blurring of the lines.
Absolutely. Russia is essentially asking, is one stray missile in a Polish field enough to trigger NATO's Article 5 and start a global war? No. What about two? It forces NATO into bureaucratic paralysis, constantly debating if an incident was a deliberate attack or a technical glitch.
Yeah. And the tactics Russia is employing inside occupied Ukraine are equally focused on erasure, but demographically. The sources detail a horrifying strategy. Russian media use a 10-year-old girl rescued from Kostyantynivka, put her on camera to praise Russia, and they're placing her with relatives in Russian-controlled territory.
Using a child as a living instrument of propaganda, and it's paired with the Kremlin-controlled Orthodox Church establishing Cossack education programs.
Right, which are basically militarized youth camps to instill a pro-Russian nationalist identity into the kids.
The goal isn't just holding physical territory. It's systematically reprogramming the next generation of Ukrainian children so the occupation becomes psychologically permanent.
It is incredibly grim to see how methodically these slow burn strategies are executed. So we've covered drone swarms, economic warfare, gray zone quarantines, and demographic weaponization. All of this currently relies on human commanders agonizing over escalation. So, of course, the next variable is artificial intelligence.
The ultimate accelerator for all of this.
Yeah. We have a survey from the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR. They polled over 350 foreign policy experts on how AI will impact the global balance of power by 2035.
Which is practically tomorrow in terms of defense planning.
Basically, yeah. They mapped out four plausible futures: rival regimes, fragmented multipolarity, great power concert, and inclusive governance. But the consensus was the most alarming part. These experts overwhelmingly believe that integrating AI into military systems makes great power conflict significantly more likely by 2035.
And it comes down to the speed of war.
Well, let me push back on that, because we always hear the tech optimist narrative, right? We're told AI will make targeting more precise, remove human emotion, reduce errors. But these 350 experts are basically saying AI will just help us make apocalyptic mistakes at lightning speed.
They are saying exactly that, because human error and hesitation are often what prevent wars. Human decision-making has a natural speed limit. A commander has to gather intel, brief the chain of command, talk to lawyers about ROE.
It takes hours or days. It gives diplomats a chance to pick up a phone.
Precisely. But when you integrate autonomous AI, that pause evaporates. The experts point to the loss of control over autonomous systems, accelerated cyber attacks, and rushed decision-making as the primary drivers of future conflict.
Because if your adversary has an autonomous system that reacts in milliseconds, you have to deploy one too, or you're wiped out before you can react.
And suddenly you have an algorithm directly reacting to an adversary's algorithm. The human is completely out of the loop. Imagine an AI sensor mistakes a commercial radar ping for a missile lock, and it instantly launches a counterstrike before a human operator even sees a warning light. The risk of a fatal miscalculation skyrockets.
Which brings us full circle to the uncrewed Lightfish drone and the Chinese destroyer. In 2026, a human captain had to look at the radar, assess the drone, and manually alter course. In 2035, an AI controlling that destroyer might just classify the drone as a swarm threat and obliterate it instantly.
And if that drone belongs to the U.S. Navy instead of a commercial company, that algorithm just started a major war in a fraction of a second.
The technology is advancing so much faster than our legal frameworks can handle.
It really is. The water in the boiling frog's pot is heating up, and we are handing the stove dial over to an algorithm.
That is a sobering realization. Which is why understanding the mechanics underneath all this noise is so critical. And it leaves us with one final provocative thought for you to mull over. We've explored how the speed of war is moving toward automation. Uncrewed vessels, algorithms fighting algorithms. But what about the other side? As war becomes automated, will the future of diplomacy have to become automated as well?
That's the real question.
Right. In 2035, will human diplomats just be too slow to de-escalate conflicts that are started in milliseconds? Will we need AI peacekeepers just to negotiate with the AI warfighters?
It's a lot to process.
It really is.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking this deep dive into the global security landscape with us. That's the briefing for today. Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll catch you on the next one.
This concludes today's operational summary. Thank you for listening.